Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast with me, Ian Welsh. I'm with Irene Quarshie, who's a Vice President, Product Quality and Responsible Sourcing at Target, and we're at the Modern Slavery and Forced Labour Forum in Washington, D.C. at the Pew Centre. Welcome, Irene.
Thank you for having me.
I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about the biggest modern slavery risks for Target.
Target has a very complex supply chain. We source and sell product, everything from apparel and shoes to accessories and furniture and pencils in between. And so as you can imagine, that is a challenge in and of itself. We do not own our manufacturing facilities. We contract out. And so that makes transparency and understanding of all of your suppliers even more difficult as well. However, we've made great progress over the years. We've been committed to full understanding our suppliers, certainly at the primary level and increasingly moving beyond that with the tier two. And we're operating in over 20 plus countries of production, which are very unique. So there are multiple challenges that impact a general merchandiser like Target. And so it certainly makes for an interesting challenge, but we're certainly up to the task.
Just some of the numbers around your business, I mean, $73.8 billion of turnover last year, 2015, 341,000 employees. I mean, you're obviously turning over an awful lot of products, an awful lot of people involved in your business. So these challenges must be enormous when you're talking about all the kind of potential supply chain modern slavery risks.
The scale is significant. We are the second largest importer into the U.S. in terms of container volume. As you mentioned, that's billions of units each year. And so we've got to have our ducks in a row. And the fortunate thing is that Target has a long-standing history of investing in corporate social responsibility efforts, and that extends to our supply chain sustainability and responsible sourcing as well.
So we've just been in a session looking at some of the challenges in the manufacturing sector, and we talked a lot about auditing. What is your view on the pros and cons of auditing, and can you give us some evidence that they can be really effective in a supply chain of Target's complexity and really taking influence and impact to scale?
You know, auditing, I believe, is necessary. It's certainly a foundational component to anybody's responsible sourcing or social compliance efforts. To me, it is a starting point. It allows you to understand what is happening. It gives you a touch point with your suppliers, and it offers lessons that can be applied to more proactive and preventative measures. If you rely on auditing by itself, then it's not as impactful. The challenge with auditing is that most brands and retailers have their own sets of audits, and so there is a significant risk of audit fatigue, and we hear it from our suppliers every single day. You know, Target was in my facility today, and Walmart's here tomorrow, and you're asking largely the same questions. Why can't we have one audit, right? Because it's very disruptive. And we're looking at that through the SAC, the Sustainable Apparel Coalition. There is an industry-wide effort to do what we call social convergence, where we can hopefully agree on a set of common standards that will help to solve that audit fatigue. But I believe audit is a foundational element to better understand what's happening so that you can be more proactive.
I guess the problem is the sort of people that come to this sort of event all want to get the audit problem sorted out, all want to audit fatigue to become something of the past. How do you all go back and persuade your colleagues internally that, you know what, we need to be sharing data from audits with everyone else and make it easier for suppliers, because ultimately that will benefit all of us?
Well, I don't know that that's going to be as hard as some people think. I mean, it's been easier for us to align on the environmental side, right? So we have the Higg Index. Most of the large brands and retailers around the globe have adopted it. Target has applied the Higg Index, and we use that. The social component has been more challenging because in some ways it goes down to a company's values. You know, if you take the issue of working hours, are you okay with a 40-hour working week or are you okay with an 80-hour working week? That comes down to values. And the conversations I've been a part of, it's come down to those critical points of, I don't feel comfortable that 80 hours is okay. Sitting next to a brand that says, it happens, get over it, it's fine. So it really gets to the heart of, I think, corporate values. And that's why it's more difficult to tackle than environmental issues.
Interesting point about the hours. If you have a company, one company, as you say, said, right, come on, it's 40 hours is a reasonable working week. Another company says, well, 80 hours, well, that just happens. What you wouldn't want to end up with is a compromise at 60, because that's not acceptable either.
Right.
So, I mean, the challenge, I guess, is to get down to the kind of everyone agreeing on a level which gives a level playing field.
Right.
So what sort of collaboration works then?
You know, I think that over either by force or by just recognition that the challenges are just too great to do it on our own, We have had, I think, great examples of collaboration. The Sustainable Apparel Coalition is a good one. I mentioned more recently about the Higgindex, where we are leveraging the same standard around environmental issues to establish a baseline and to measure progress. The work that has been done in Bangladesh, either through the Alliance or the Accord, pick your flavor, you know, that is where the industry rallied around this issue of worker safety, committed a tremendous amount of resources in terms of financial dollars and bodies, and have really moved the dial in terms of the number of fire-related incidents or building safety-related incidents in that country. I think there have been great examples of where the industry has worked together. I believe this issue of forced labor is another one where we can really band together to make significant impact in short order.
Do you think that Rana Plaza was a turning point in terms of requiring a polling situation to happen before some people will act? Do you think we've got beyond that now and people are really wanting to move to a situation where we won't ever have that sort of thing happening again?
I firmly believe that. I think there was collaboration happening in pockets before Rana Plaza, for sure. Rana Plaza certainly brought the issue of worker safety to light, and we did sort of band forces to address that issue. But now I think in this space, there aren't any real competitors. It's about something that's bigger than Target or any other single brand. We're talking about issues that impact communities. And there is a coordinated commitment to solve for those issues in ways that I can't even remember.
Transparency is something which is a big part of it. Now, Target have already publicly declared your tier one suppliers. You're about to publicly declare your tier two suppliers. I know you know that you said that engaging with them at the same level is still a work in progress, but just to declare them is something quite big in terms of transparency. So what benefits do your company get from that across the board?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. One, we have a longstanding commitment to being a great corporate citizen since our inception in 62. So this is very much in line to who we are as a company. So that's number one. Secondly, we believe that it is good business practice to have a good handle on your suppliers and your supply chain, right? That's just in our estimation about being best in class sourcing organization. Thirdly, increasingly consumers are very interested in understanding where, from where, and under what conditions their products are made. And so I think you see a perfect storm emerging in Target's case. A strong legacy, an understanding that this is the right thing to do from a business perspective, and then ultimately our guests or consumers who want this from us. And so for those reasons, we view that as an absolute necessity.
And are you ready for there to be problems that will come up? Because the size of your tier two must be enormous. There are going to be supplies in there that you're not going to be 100% delighted with, perhaps, some of their activities. So you're ready, though, to engage with the NGO community. They're going to say, well, high on Target, you've got these companies involved, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, you know, it is an awesome challenge. And, you know, in my role, I spend a lot of time as we are on the verge of launching our aspirational intent or strategic intent in this space publicly. Part of it is helping our organization feel more comfortable that aspiration doesn't necessarily mean perfection, that there will be times where things go wrong. But if we're clear about the end game, we'll get through it. We are absolutely committed to working with NGOs. We can't do this alone. We need to have all stakeholders, all key stakeholders as part of the process, and be open to open communication. And that includes celebrating the wins, but being also brutally honest when we've fallen short of our expectations. I think that commitment will help us achieve our long-term goals.
Bit of collaboration you mentioned, again, involving other organizations with this well-being index you're developing with Levi's and Harvard. How's that going to work?
You know, this is something that was started first by Levi's and Harvard, where they are looking primarily at factory workers to understand what are the components of a worker's well-being, and then being able to set clear criteria on the front end, and then through technology and other mechanism, routinely gauge where workers are. Post, during, and pre-post and after certain interventions or program implementations. It's very much in the initial phases. We're still in the pilot phase. We just recently joined on board with Levi, so there's more to come. But we're really excited to be able to begin to quantify what continuous improvement means. If we're going to shift away from auditing, we still need to be able to point to, I think, measurable results. And this is one way we're hoping that we can be able to do that.
Great. I guess it's all about, in changing circumstances, finding the results and the measures that indicate success and keep things moving forward.
Absolutely. Our target is committed to continuous improvement and to leaning in because we know that this is important. And as a global citizen, we believe it is our responsibility to be a part of the solution.
You're committed to ever better targets.
Absolutely.
Okay. Irene Quarty from Target, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much, Ian.